FM News Talk 97.1. On-demand audio.
J.B. Pritzker delivers his budget address today. It's got a lot of people paying a lot of attention to the future, specifically this budget address being about this coming year. Now, this is not the four-year plan for J.B. Pritzker, but he does have the opportunity to weigh in on these things on a larger scale. Adam Schuster, the Budget and Tax Research Director with Illinois Policy Institute, joins us now. Adam, thanks for coming on the show today.
Yeah, thanks for having me on.
So what did we learn today from the governor about his plans here for, the next 12 months in the state of Illinois and beyond?
Well, today the governor proposed a lot of new revenue, some of which is sort of short-term revenues, including legalizing and taxing recreational marijuana, taxing vaporizers, e-cigarettes, expanding gambling and taxing that. A lot of sort of sin taxes. In the long run, he proposed a progressive income tax, which he claims will be fair, but we have research showing will actually result in a middle-class tax hike, harm the economy, and ultimately fail to solve the state's fiscal problems anyway. What we didn't hear in this proposal was any sort of proposed structural spending reforms, anything to bend the cost curve of government so that it was in line with what we could afford. And actually, the governor sort of presented a false choice where he claims that without the progressive income tax and all these other new types of revenues he's asking for, that we'll have to slash social services and education and that this is the only other alternative to massive tax hikes. And that's simply not true. You know, the Illinois Policy Institute, we've put out a plan for structural spending reform, sort of common sense, bipartisan ideas that actually would balance our budget immediately and put us on a path towards eliminating our debt and actually getting us to an income tax cut.
Yeah, that's encouraging. Regarding the biggest thing that's the burden on the entire state of Illinois, the pension obligation that our state has, what was his commentary on how we can start tackling that monster that's in the closet?
So bizarrely and unfortunately, he proposed repeating a lot of the mistakes that got us into this mess to begin with. That includes a pension obligation bond, so selling debt to pay off pension debt. That's essentially a gamble with taxpayer money that could end up costing us more in the long run. He talked about stretching out the payments, extending the ramp. Your listeners might be familiar with the Edgar ramp, which is one of the things that is the root causes of our problem, where we're sort of kicking the can on making these payments. The governor wants to reduce the annual payments by about $800 million with no plan for actually reducing the cost of the benefits. So that's really just a can kick. And he's talked about, you know, potentially selling some unused state assets, including small things like unused office space, up to and including large items like the tollway, which, you know, again, is sort of a Band-Aid solution. It doesn't really address the structural problem that spending on pensions since the year 2000 has grown 677%. So we did not hear any call for a constitutional amendment, which really is a necessary first step towards putting the pension system on a sustainable path.
Yeah, it's pretty shocking to see that we're not taking this problem seriously and head on as a priority. I mean, so if we're not attacking this immediately, what do we glean from J.B. Pritzker's budget address today is his priority?
Well, he talked about spending more on all kinds of things. He talked about spending more on education, which is something that we at the Illinois Policy Institute actually want to improve education outcomes. We want to divert more of the dollars to the classroom, but we have a very different way of doing it. Pritzker's talking about, you know, dumping in $375 million into the system as it exists today, which is very top-heavy, a lot of administrators, very big bureaucracy, and all of that siphons money away from students and classrooms and teachers. And so we don't believe dumping in more raw dollars is the way to accomplish better education outcomes. We actually think what we need to do is reduce the size of that bureaucracy and direct more of the money into the classroom. He talked about spending more money on all kinds of services. Notably, what he did is, so he has to propose a balanced budget legally. He has to propose a balanced budget that does not include any revenues that don't exist under current law. So he basically has a constraint there. And he said, well, if you don't give me this new money, then we'll do a 4% across-the-board cut. And this is a false choice I was talking about, where he says we're going to cut education and social services and all these other things. But he notably exempted pensions and government worker compensation, which is important because those really are the two biggest cost drivers of our budget deficit and of our, you know, spending problem. So if you're unwilling to tackle pension reform and you're unwilling to, you know, bring government worker health insurance in line with what the private sector pays for their own health insurance, then it is very difficult to balance the budget. But there's no reason why we should put those things aside and not look at them, because they're such a large share of our budget and they're the fastest growing areas of our budget.
Yeah, for sure. We have the signing of the minimum wage increase, which would be gradually increased to $15 an hour. You know, this all sounds good for people who are low income earners or entry level workers. I know, and a lot of the focus ends up being on how this is going to affect small businesses. However, mm-hmm. there are a lot of public workers who are making minimum wage or less than certainly $15 an hour. On a broad scale, this type of initiative that has now been signed into law, how does this affect state spending?
So just at the state level alone, this is going to cost $1.1 billion once fully implemented, with the number of minimum wage workers.
That is that annually?
Employees. $1.1 billion annually, once fully implemented. So, you know, he complained a lot about coming into office with a $3 billion deficit, and then seems to have immediately done everything he could to dig himself into a deeper hole, including this minimum wage increase. What they didn't do is any cost estimate for local governments. So local governments, you know, whether it's a park district employing a lifeguard, a community college who employs student workers, there's a lot of local governments who have minimum wage workers as well, and they did not do any type of estimate for what this is going to cost those local governments. So this is another unfunded mandate from the state that is ultimately likely to be paid for with higher property taxes. You know, it's more of the same, that the state puts mandates on local governments that they can't afford to pay, and then they have to hike property taxes to try to make their own budgets meet. So that was, you know, setting aside the effect on small businesses and the economy, and you know, a lot of retailers and other businesses are very upset about this. It really has a huge fiscal impact just on the dollars and cents of budget making.
Yeah, especially when you consider, you know, in even in like school districts, the amount of aides that work, or office staff, or you know, support staff that work, that are certainly not making the $15 an hour mark, which is about, according to my math, about a little over $30,000 a year. This is a huge financial obligation on those local governments, funded by property taxes. And, you know, like where I live, property taxes are already so high that they end up passing referendums and propositions to add an extra level of income. It seems as though it never ends. And again, predicated on J.B. Pritzker's commitment to a progressive income tax change in 2020, potentially, it looks like at this point in time, everywhere you look, you're facing potential tax increases.
That's right. And, you know, the types of, on one hand, he's pushing for a progressive income tax. And on the other hand, he's pushing for more taxes on e-cigarettes, vaping, gambling, that are very regressive and will, you know, hit the poor and the working class particularly hard. So it's sort of an odd combination of ideas and ways to raise money. But, you know, none of it's necessary. And I think that's really the fundamental takeaway here, is the false choice that the governor presented is just that. It's a false choice. There's a way that we can meet our core obligations of government spending, education, infrastructure, social services, mental health services. We can pay for all of that with a lower tax burden than we currently have and eliminate our debt and balance our budgets. You just have to let the math lead you and go to the areas where the budget, where the spending is growing the fastest, and the areas that are taking up the largest portion of the budget. And there exist common sense, bipartisan ideas for reforming those cost drivers that the governor did not mention today, and it is very disappointing.
Well, we're going to have to continue to watch this very closely. We know Illinois Policy will be advocating on behalf of the taxpayer, IllinoisPolicy.org. The thing that I like the most about what Illinois Policy Institute does is that they provide solutions for the problems that they want to bring to the forefront, bring attention, shine a spotlight on something that's wrong. You guys always have an answer on how we could actually solve these problems, and it's all at illinoispolicy.org. Adam Schuster, thanks so much for the time today. We appreciate it.
Thank you.
We'll talk to you soon.